Britain's conversation. This is LBC with Eddie Mair.
Every Friday at 10 to 5, it's Simon Marks's American Week, and here he is.
Eddie, where is it appropriate to start this final American week of the Trump presidency? As we sit here and watch those final Trump administration officials who haven't had the decency to resign, packing their belongings into the removal vans. There is so much going on here that is both hair-raising and eyebrow-raising in equal measure. The fact that President Trump is making it known that he wants a grand military send-off when he departs the White House on Wednesday morning and takes a final flight on Air Force One, just hours before Joe Biden moves in after an inauguration that Donald Trump is refusing to attend. The fact that the president has let it be known that he never wants to hear himself being compared to disgraced former President Richard Nixon. Up until now, the gold standard of shame in the annals of presidential history. But to be fair, the comparison should not be made. Nixon, after all, never incited a crowd of armed conspiracy theorists to invade the congressional building, leaving five people dead in their wake. Then there's the fact that scores are being settled as the first family heads for the exits. The revelation that the president's daughter Ivanka and her husband Jared Kushner have never allowed the Secret Service personnel protecting them to use any of the six toilets in their upscale Washington mansion. They had to nip next door and borrow Barack Obama's lav. The former president not behaving like a privileged character ripped from the pages of Upstairs Downstairs. But tempting though it is to focus on all of that. Instead, we should probably focus on this.
There's a guy ripping my mask off, and he was able to rip away my baton and beat me with it, and he was practically foaming at the mouth. So just these people were true believers in the worst way.
The testimony on CNN last night of Officer Daniel Hodges, one of the heroes of President Trump's violent attempt to overturn the outcome of a Democratic American election. When the president's mob tried to smash their way into the congressional building, he was one of the police officers trying very bravely to keep them out, and it almost cost him his life. Those are his screams caught on horrific video that shows Officer Hodges jammed up against one of the doors to the congressional complex. His colleagues behind pushing forward with riot shields, violent thugs ripping off his gas mask and coming perilously close to suffocating him as they pushed against the police line.
They say things like, we've been supporting you through all this Black Lives Matter stuff. You should have our back. And they felt like entitled. They felt like they would just walk up there and tell us that they're here to take back Congress, and we would agree with them, and we'd walk in hand and just take over the nation. But obviously that was not the case, and it will never be the case.
The survival of American democracy after 4 years of President Trump's relentless onslaught comes down to individuals. Historians will speculate on what would have happened here if Daniel Hodges and his fellow police hadn't put up a fight, or if Brad Raffensperger, the Republican Secretary of State in Georgia, hadn't been a man of principle when he was ordered 2 weeks ago by his president to conjure up another 12,000 votes for his president, or if 10 Republicans this week hadn't backed Donald Trump's second impeachment, signalling that while the party has been split asunder by him, there may still be a core of constitutional decency somewhere in its midst. Individuals, like Officer Michael Fanone of the DC Police, who was at his desk last Wednesday when the insurrection began, ran to the Capitol to defend it and told CNN he was tasered multiple times by thugs who then threatened to kill him.
Guys were stripping me of my gear, these rioters, pulling my badge off my chest. They ripped my radio off my vest. Started pulling like ammunition magazines on my belt, and then some guys started getting a hold of my gun, and they were screaming out, kill him with his own gun. And I thought about using deadly force. I thought about shooting people, and then I just came to the conclusion that would definitely give them the justification that they were looking for to kill me. The other option I thought of was, try to appeal to somebody's humanity. I just remember yelling out that I have kids, and it seemed to work. Some people in the crowd started to encircle me and try to offer me some level of protection. That provided me with enough time, or other officers enough time to get to me and get me the hell out of there. and back into the west front of the Capitol. A lot of people have asked me, you know, my thoughts on the individuals in the crowd that, you know, that helped me or tried to offer some assistance. And I think kind of the conclusion I've come to is like, you know, thank you, but f*** you for being there.
It will take years for this country to get over this, and that presumes that there are not more acts of violence. The FBI says there may be. Massive intelligence gathering is underway as the president's violent supporters are rounded up and charged. The charge sheets themselves are revelatory. An Arkansas man charged with beating a police officer with a flagpole claimed of Congress that everybody in there is treasonous. The suspect, who left a note for Vice President Mike Pence that read, "It's only a matter of time. Justice is coming." The woman in Cleveland, a former occupational therapist in the city's school system, who said she was acting against the global evil of human trafficking and pedophilia in our government agencies. They come from all over the country and from every walk of life. Teachers, police officers, firefighters. There's even an Olympic gold medalist swimmer among them. All believers in President Trump's lies about the election being rigged. All convinced Joe Biden is about to become an illegitimate president, many of them armed to the teeth. Which brings us very neatly to Lauren Boebert.
Hi, I'm Lauren. I'm a newly elected congresswoman from Colorado. Even though I now work in one of the most liberal cities in America, I refuse to give up my rights, especially my Second Amendment rights. I will carry my firearm in D.C. and in Congress.
It is important to understand that the gun-toting congresswoman from Colorado, by no means the country's only elected extremist, will be here long after the final Trump removal truck rolls out of town. She wears a Glock pistol wherever she goes. On January the 5th, the police formally warned her that firearms laws in Washington do not permit that. This week, after the violent riots, she caused a standoff at the entrance to the House of Representatives when she refused to go through a metal detector.
So if you see me in D.C., say hi. You're safe with me.
The problem is that some members of Congress feel decidedly unsafe in her presence. Those who turned on the president at this week's impeachment hearings are now receiving threats to their physical safety. Congressman Peter Mayer from Michigan is now wearing a bulletproof vest.
I have colleagues who are now traveling with armed escorts. Our expectation is that someone may try to kill us.
We have reached the point here now where metal detectors are positioned at the entrances to the floor of both the House and the Senate to protect members of Congress from other members of Congress. No bookie would even have taken that bet 4 years ago, nor imagined that Joe Biden is about to be sworn into office behind a physical ring of steel. This city turned into a fortress that extends way beyond Capitol Hill and right into the heart of what used to be its business district before COVID-19 brought all that to a standstill.
The vaccine rollout in the United States has been a dismal failure thus far. Tomorrow, I will lay out our vaccination plan to correct course and meet our goal of 100 million shots at the end of my first 100 days as president.
The president-elect last night issuing a clarion call, warning the nation that next Wednesday afternoon, a national effort will be getting underway for the first time to combat the pandemic.
This will be one of the most challenging operational efforts we have ever undertaken as a nation. We'll have to move heaven and earth to get more people vaccinated, to create more places for them to get vaccinated, to mobilize more medical teams to get shots in people's arms, to increase vaccine supply, and to get it out the door as fast as possible.
He's proposing nearly $2 trillion of expenditure to beat back a virus that has claimed nearly 400,000 lives and created the most severe recession here since the Great Depression of the 1930s. It will serve as an early, very challenging test of his ability to persuade Republicans to work with him, at least those Republicans hoping they are finally about to be rid of President Trump and freed from a four-year self-inflicted nightmare of accommodating him. By this time next week, the president will be camped out at Mar-a-Lago, his luxury golf club in Florida, a place that he hopes to turn into an alternative center of power. We do not yet know whether he will seek, before he leaves office, to pardon himself, his family members, maybe even his personal lawyer Rudy Giuliani, whose bills the president is now refusing to pay. Not surprisingly, it's now reported that President Trump is struggling to find lawyers willing to defend him at his Senate minute trial. It could begin as early as Thursday. This time next week, stripped of his ability to tweet, to reach people through Facebook and the other platforms of social media, and stripped of the bully pulpit of the presidency that he has stained like no other occupant, how will he get his message out to his millions of cult-like followers? For America's propaganda right-wing television networks, Eddie, fresh opportunity is about to knock.
Simon Marks' American Week back next Friday on this programme at 10 to 5. Simon, I'm sure, back with us before then, not least on Wednesday, as part of our coverage of the inauguration of Joe Biden. We start at 4 on Wednesday, as usual. If, like Donald Trump, you can't be at the inauguration, don't worry, LBC will take you there. Now, this Friday night, the Steve Allen soundbite of the night. This is LBC. I'm Eddie Mayer.